Hello and welcome to the Geeky Room podcast. Joining me, your host, Mr. Ryan Parrish, is Mr. Keith Bluefield.
Hi, everybody.
Mr. Sam Edwards.
Hello.
And Mr. Lee Price.
Hello.
How are we all this sunny Birmingham day? Well, sunny Birmingham day.
It's much more comfortable now.
Yes.
It's not as scorchingly hot as it has been.
We've moved a few thousand kilometres back from, like, the sunny burning stage that we were in a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
It's gone back to reasonable.
It's proper English summer now.
We'll see how long it lasts. It's getting a bit, might start creeping back up again.
Yeah.
Coming up to today's show, we talked about the unfortunate passing away of Black Sabbath legend, the Prince of Darkness, the King of Birmingham, Mr. Ozzy Osbourne. We'll be looking forward to Bath 2025 with Spirit Away coming up at the Garden Cinema at Botanical Gardens. Bandai Namco Cross Story had a quick pop in, Lee and myself, where we looked at Pac-Man on his 45th anniversary little pop-up shop. Wild in Art is on in Birmingham at the moment with the Bulls, which Sam will talk to us about in a little bit. And of course, our regular One Geek thing, but we'll be back after this.
Hey, you know Pac-Man?
This guy?
Yes. It's his 45th anniversary. Mm. Yes. And we are here today at the Bandai Namco Cross store, and where they have a Pac-Man pop-up to celebrate the 45th anniversary.
So he is 45 years old.
Which is slightly older than you or me. But he is the cornerstone of modern arcade gaming, and he's still very popular to this day.
Yes, like Pac-Man's still like a very sort of iconic character. Like everyone kind of recognizes the sort of iconic Pac-Man shape, except my aunt, who earlier today had no idea what Pac-Man was. It's like the only time I've ever seen someone not know what Pac-Man is. But
he's had many descriptions over the past. The usual one I always get is the cheese wheel with the slice missing.
Yes,
but power pill. Just general look.
Yep.
But did you know that his original name was Puckman?
Yes.
But that got stopped in America, and Japan renamed it because there was a very strong opportunity that somebody might have rechanged the P for Puckman.
Yes. Although, that does lead me nicely into other ways that the 45th anniversary is being celebrated by Bandai Namco. Mm-hmm. Because in the new game Shadow Labyrinth, you were joined by a character named Puck. So in that game, which I have described in our gaming roundup as Pac-Man's goth phase.
Yes.
It's basically a Metroidvania where you play as a mysterious swordsman who is joined by a character named Puck, who is like a yellow ball, who is basically just Pac-Man. And you gain powers from Puck eating enemies. After you sort of have like these big Metroidvania style fights, it is very strange. It is based off the secret level Amazon thing, which also had like an Agent Pac-Man in it, but that was like supposed to be a precursor to this. So there's that. That recently came out. We've also got a stage in Tekken 8, which is very, very interesting because it's basically like a very sort of voxel-y sort of arena.
So it's Tekken Bandai Namco.
Yes.
Yes, that does make sense.
they've thrown a whole load of Pac-Man stuff in, including a new stage called Pac Pixels. Basically, it's like an arena, square arena thing made of just voxels with like the ghosts and Pac-Man flying around the place. There's breakable floors so that you go.
Some power pills.
I think floating in the distance, but nothing that affects the actual fight. It's only like the floors that affect the actual fight. It's a very, very strange stage when everything else looks so realistic. Every other stage looks so realistic, and then you load up this one, and it's just like this brightly coloured pixel art thing that hits you in the face. It's also especially weird because the first time I played that stage, I was fighting against Clive from Final Fantasy 16. So just that like weird crossover where the one thing that was originally Tekken was my character. So.
But everything else Pac-Man related.
Is Pac-Man or Final Fantasy?
Yeah, I suppose I made Pac-Man a playable character because we have had Pac-Man with arms and legs in the cartoon. Yes.
And he was in Smash Brothers.
Yes.
As a playable character, so. Yeah.
You never know. Yeah. Might be a secret drop knowing Bandai Namco. They do like to do weird stuff.
I mean, Tekken 7 did have what's-his-face from The Walking Dead, Negan.
Yes. So, yes.
Which came out of nowhere.
Yeah. Weird cameo.
At least like, the SNK Capcom things made sense. Yeah. But, you know. But yes, what else do we have? We have, there was an exhibition in Seattle, the Museum of Pop Culture, that was basically just dedicated to Pac-Man, and they also showed Ghostly Adventures cartoon and the old Hanna-Barbera Pac-Man cartoon. They sort of screened those along with like just exhibits showing off like the history of Pac-Man. There's been a collaboration with Atari as well.
Of course. It was the first home console.
Yes. So there's a compilation that came out, I think, a couple of years ago called Atari 50, which, as the name suggests, is 50 sort of classic Atari games sort of thrown together. They have they recently announced a DLC. I'm not sure if it's out yet, but it's basically all of like the old Namco games that came out for the Atari 2600, which obviously includes Pac-Man.
Yeah.
So that's obviously part of that. And they're also doing a special Atari mini console, which is dedicated to just Pac-Man.
Why don't consoles have wood paneling on anymore?
I don't know.
Such a great thing to have Atari 2600.
No, now they just look like Wi-Fi routers or mini fridges. There's a lot of stuff going on for the 45th anniversary.
Yep. So if you do like Pac-Man or Inky, Pinky, Pinky or Clyde, you can pop down to Bandai Namco stop here in Birmingham, New Street. I think there's a pop in a London store as well.
Robert, I would assume
sure.
So, yeah.
That one's in Camden Market.
Yep.
If you come down to Bandai Namco, New Street, there's definitely a beautiful range of Pac-Man merchandise for you. And there's some other really fun stuff like One Piece card game, Tamagotchi, the Gacha machines, and the claw machines.
Yeah.
But yeah, come down, enjoy. But we'll see you soon.
Yes.
We've had owls, we've had snow dogs, but if you come into Birmingham at the moment, you might see a fair few of these guys. Bulls in the City is a brand new walking trail from Wild in the City, featuring a load of colourful new interpretations of Birmingham's iconic Bullring Bull. There are 128 bulls in total, 40 larger ones in public spaces and 88 smaller ones, which are mostly in public buildings like the library or in the lobbies of hotels and office blocks. Most are in the city centre, but to see the whole collection out in the wild, you'll also want to head to Boldmere and Harborne. Each bull has been beautifully and uniquely painted by talented artists. If you'd like a bull of your own, there are a few ways you can get one. The official shop in the Great Western Arcade has a host of bull merch, including cuddly cattle. Or you can come along to Birmingham Hospice on 10th of August or 12th of September, where, for £30, you can sit and paint your own pottery bull with a nice glass of champagne. But if you're really dedicated and fancy one of the big bulls, they will all be auctioned off at the end of the event at Millennium Point. All the money from the auction, shop and other events will go to support Birmingham Hospice. Bulls in the City runs until 14th of September, so why not have a wander around town and see how many you can spot? For more information, including a map of all the bulls' locations, head to the website bullsinthecity.co.uk.
Hi everyone, Ryan here from Geeky Brewery, just for a quick update at Birmingham Anime Film Festival. Just to let you know, the Spirited Away screening for Botanical Gardens Garden Cinema is sold out now, so those of you who are looking after the get tickets, congratulations. If you're still looking for anime, of course the main festival running from the 27th of September through to the Thursday of the following week of the 2nd of October. Some fantastic titles coming back. We're bringing back the Makoto Shinkai-a-thon that we did back in 2023. So if you were a big fan of the Shinkai films, that they're coming back. Really good news. We've got a Satoshi Kon double bill over at the MAC. We're bringing back some of the favorites from the last few years, such as Penguin Highway. Some fantastic films coming up. Keep an eye on the BAFF website, baff.uk, for updates on what's coming up. There'll be some massive updates coming over the next few weeks onto the website. Really looking forward to it. We've got some special kind of things to go alongside of it. So again, keep your eye out on the website. really hope you can fall. Look forward to joining us. Don't forget, as always, we've got our wonderful partners at the Mockingbird and the Mac as well, who do films outside that. The Mockingbird have just finished their successful run in the Ford Film Festival. There's some amazing other film festivals coming up as well, especially at the Mac. We've got the Square Eyes TV Festival, which runs pretty much straight after the Anime Film Festival. But we'll be back again, and we'll shall see you shortly. And don't forget to check out the website at the QR code over there. But for now, back to the main show.
You can't kill rock and roll, it's here to stay. So said the enigmatic frontman of Black Sabbath, Ozzy Osbourne, who passed away just a few short days after a barnstorming performance at Aston Villa, where he reassembled the legendary Black Sabbath for one final time. From the smoky stages of Birmingham to the global throne of heavy metal, Ozzy Osbourne has carved his legacy in thunder and distortion. Born John Michael Osbourne, he rose from working class roots to become the wild, electrifying frontman of Black Sabbath, pioneering a sound that would define generations. With Black Sabbath, Ozzy gave birth to heavy metal, dark, raw, and unapologetically loud. Tracks like Paranoid, Iron Man, and War Pigs became anthems of rebellion. His voice, a haunting wail that echoed through the ages. After Sabbath, Ozzy didn't fade, he exploded. Crazy Train, Mr. Crowley, No More Tears, each song a masterclass in metal. With Randy Rhoads and other guitar gods by his side, Ozzy defined what it meant to be a solo artist. But there was more than just the madness. Yes, he bit the head off a bat. Yes, he starred in the Osbournes. But behind the chaos is a survivor, battling addiction, defying expectations, and always returning to the stage. Ozzy is proof that rock isn't just music, it's resilience, rebellion, and raw emotion. Ozzy is a true legend. A Grammy winner, a Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, a voice that shook the world and still does. Ozzy Osbourne wasn't just a musician, he was a movement. Birmingham Museum and Art Gallery will be running the Ozzy Osbourne Working Class Hero exhibition until September. So if you get a chance, do take a look. To Ozzy, thanks for the madness, the music and the magic. All hail the Prince of Darkness.
It is time for our regular roundup for what's the geeky thing we've been up to whilst we've been away. One geek thing, let's start off with Lee. Lee, what's been your one geek thing while we've been away?
It's actually been like a little while ago, but I went to the PlayStation concert that happened at the arena, which whatever its name is these days.
BP Pulse, I think. Is that the one by the NIA? Oh, not the NIA.
It is the NIA.
It's the NEC, but it's called the BP Pulse Live.
No, the NIA.
The NIA.
Is the utility arena.
That's the
utility arena.
To anybody that comes to Brum, if you ask us where the NEC or the NIA are,
we know it.
Yeah. If you ask us Genting Arena, utility arena, we don't know.
Yeah. BP Pulse Live, whatever it is.
Exactly. That's why I was just like, the arena. So yeah, I went to see that. It's actually a few months ago when I went to see that, but basically it was like they started it in Europe. They're going to do a world tour. It was very ridiculous when they announced it, because they announced the European dates as a world tour, and all the Americans were like, "Well, it's not a world tour." I'm like, they're announcing the North American dates at a later date. but yeah,
but again, that's still not a world tour because that's just Europe and North America. Yeah. Nobody cares about themselves.
The way they did it was, it's built around four games soundtracks with like a few sort of smaller bits sort of dotted around.
Yeah.
So it was built around Horizon Zero Dawn, Ghost of Tsushima, mm-hmm. It was God of War and The Last of Us, the four that they did. And they sort of dotted in, I'm trying to remember, it was Bloodborne, Journey, Helldivers, and at the end they had Astrobot as well.
Did any Hans Zimmer sneak in?
No, because Hans Zimmer has not done soundtracks for any of these, which I'm sure Keith is pleased by. In terms of like who the original composers are, I know God of War was Bear McCreary, and Ghost of Tsushima, I can't remember who did that, but because it's like two names that are like complicated names that I can never remember. Then there's Joris de Man, who did Horizon, and Gustavo Santaolalla, who did The Last of Us. Very good concert. So it was like, obviously, as well as playing the score, they had like loads of screens and stuff like that. So they had like four, I think it was four or five projector screens that came down in like different patterns, and they sort of projected stuff on that as well as like a back screen. And just the sort of stuff they were doing with that was like incredible, like the way that they sort of, so that you'd have like almost holograms in front of the orchestra, or they'd turn it into full screens, which would hide the orchestra temporarily. And just like, yeah, just playing lots of bits and pieces from each game. Really enjoyed like the Last of Us section, because the soundtrack to that is really, really good. Just the main theme of that game is one of my favorite pieces of video game music. I think the only bit that I sort of had a problem with was they randomly like threw in some country song into the Last of Us section, which I'm like, I think that played like vaguely in the background of like the bar scene in the second game, because I certainly didn't recognize.
It's on the soundtrack. It's on the soundtrack.
But yeah, like it was just a really like just sort of hearing that kind of music in that sort of setting, and then just the fact that it ended with like a couple of Astrobot tracks at the end, where I think they sort of then went into a medley using like the bots from Astrobot with the different characters and stuff on the screen, so that was kind of fun.
That's really cool. Now you did the one in London a few years back, didn't you? So how did this compare?
I didn't do it. So the one I did in London was the Sonic one.
No, that was it.
So, yeah, this would be my third video game concert. So I've done the Sonic one in London, I did the Final Fantasy one that was at the Symphony Hall last year.
Yeah.
And then this one. So yeah, just I'm really enjoying doing these sorts of concerts, because just like I really love all these soundtracks. You know, there's so much great music coming out, and
yeah,
I just think, you know, getting to see it in that setting just elevates it in a really interesting way. So
definitely awesome. Thank you, Keith. How about yourself? What's your one good thing?
I'm picking something that took a while to get to the UK, and it's mostly because of James Gunn's Superman hitting cinemas over here. So just recently arriving on Sky and Now TV was Creature Commandos, which was officially the first thing done in the new DCU that James Gunn's invented. So there are all the episodes.
Peacemaker's a bit.
Peacemaker's.
Is it not?
We've got to wait for season two to see how that all works out in terms of its positioning within the new DCU canon.
Yeah.
But this is eight episodes, all written by James Gunn. Features a ragtag group of Suicide Squad-esque commandos, but the thing about them is they're all monsters.
So, like, do you get Weasel?
So we get Weasel back, voiced by Sean Gunn. We also get The Bride, who is voiced by Indira Barma.
Mm-hmm.
We get Dr. Phosphorus, who is Alan Tudyk, of course. We get Rick Flagg Sr.,
right.
So Joel Kellerman's dad, who appears in the Superman film, voiced by Frank Grillo.
Frank Grillo, yeah, I was going to say.
And then we get Zoe Chow plays a relatively new character. I'm not 100% fully on board her history. She's like a Gil person type character. Nina something, I can't remember her name.
Yeah.
And then David Harbour turns up as the Frankenstein. He's called Frankenstein, but he's Frankenstein's monster.
Excuse me, I think you'll find that the monster is called Frankenstein and the scientist is called Frankenstein's dad.
Dr. Frankenstein.
He can go to 3 years of monster college for no reason.
Yeah.
But it brings in characters from Themyscira, so that there's a connection to Wonder Woman and stuff there. And they basically are tasked to kind of save a princess in a foreign
castle.
Castle, yeah.
Is a fire-breathing lizard involved?
No. It's bloody, it's gory, it's funny, it's heartfelt, it's touching.
Mm-hmm.
The episode that gives us some backstory into the Weasel is heartbreaking beyond belief. Considering this is practically a non-verbal character, to make you think, oh my God, I am so like on board with the Weasel
Didn't
now.
Did he eat children in the Suicide Squad?
This is propaganda, I shall say.
It feels like it's James Gunn learning from Guardians 3.
Yeah. It's really good kind of Warner Brothers style animation, the kind of good stuff. So like the kind of really good Scooby-Doos that they've done in recent years, and the good Warner Brothers animation they've done for DC stuff in the past. And I was quite surprised. I thought it was going to be fairly trashy and a bit throwaway, but it was actually really, really in-depth. And I kind of almost binged it. I watched it in a week because I was like, I need to see what happens next and what happens to these characters. Mm-hmm. And it's really good. So if you are kind of invested in the new DCU from Superman, I do highly recommend that you have a look at Creature Commandos just to fill out a bit of that kind of backstory and maybe get an idea of kind of where this version of the DC universe is going to go. It very much sets its cards on the tables as to where James Gunn wants this, and it's very comic. Mm-hmm. So if you're a fan of the comics and it's something a little bit less real, but equally fun, I've had a watch of Creature Commandos. Should be available now on Sky and Now TV.
So very much an adult cartoon.
It's a very adult cartoon. It's not one for the kids.
Yeah.
But it's great. Really, really enjoyable.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you. Sam, how about yourself?
I'm going to pick the first of two of Netflix's big tentpole dramas that are ending this year. So the first of those was Squid Game, which had its final season released last month. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. I did think, so the first season I loved, the second season I thought was a little bit of a dip, perhaps. But I really thought the third season kind of brought back a lot of the elements from the first season that I particularly enjoyed. Mm-hmm. I thought the way it ended was perfect, kind of thematically. I've seen a lot of people online, I'm going to try and say this without too many spoilers, but complaining that it was a bit kind of anticlimactic. But I think if you are kind of following the themes and Gi-hun, the main character's kind of progression through the series, and particularly the last couple of series and the debates he's having with the front man who's running the games about sort of human nature and bringing out the worst in people. I think the way it ended was the perfect kind of cap on that story. It did bring back the VIPs who were awful in the first season, and I wondered whether they might try and correct that, and they didn't at all. They doubled down on the awful accents and awful acting, but kind of happy about that in a way. The final scenes were kind of intriguing in that they set up what I think has been confirmed now to be an American kind of spin-off.
Yeah, they're having a US spin-off, which
I'm open to. I'm intrigued by it. I do think the Korean version has a lot of charm because of its Korean-ness.
Yeah.
But as long as the same people are kind of working the background on it, hopefully that can be carried through.
So now the creator was shopping the script around for about 12 years.
Okay.
And they were just like, nobody in Korea would pick it up. So it's quite good when Netflix did pick it up. They were kind of getting some Korean culture out there into the wild a little bit, and it's probably a lot of people's interest into Korean TV.
Yeah, and I think Netflix has been quite good for that. There's a few other things, Alice in Borderlands, that Korean, a few other shows that have popped up out of Korea that Netflix have championed that have done well, that possibly wouldn't have done as well without Squid Game coming first.
What was it, Physical 100?
I love Physical 100. I'm not normally into reality TV or anything like that, but Physical 100 is great. If you've not seen that,
it's basically Squid Game, but without the actual like gory side of it or anybody dying.
Kind of, yeah, and much more focused on ridiculous athleticism. It's all about finding the perfect human body, basically. Yeah. But some of the things they make the people do there are insane. I will happily talk about that off topic for a while, but I recommend that as well. But yes, Squid Game is my one geek thing for this.
Awesome. I'm going to pick something that we all enjoyed ourselves with a week or so ago, which was a trip to Warwick Castle as our geek thing. So
of course, we decided to do a day trip on the hottest day of the year
with no cloud cover.
Yeah.
Just the sun. Like the sun from Super Mario 3 just following us around the castle all day. But yeah, it was a really good fun trip. I've never been to Warwick Castle before, which I sound really weird considering it's less than, what, an hour and a half away from Birmingham?
A lot less than that, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty much like an hour on the train, and then depending on which route you take to the castle, about 10 minutes walk from the train station.
Yes, or about 40 minutes from our perspective.
That was my fault. I knew where the castle was, but I didn't know where the entrance to the castle was. So well,
it was doing what a castle should do and keeping us out.
So we did the main castle. We got to see the falconry show, which was, I think, everybody's highlight. Okay. About 20 different birds of prey, I think, just coming in and going out. So, owls, kites, eagles.
Had a condor, which was pretty impressive.
Pretty impressive. Yeah. Got to see the trebuchet get fired. That was fun.
Yeah.
Got chased by lots of wasps.
Yep, which is my favourite part.
And then we got to see the dungeons as well, because I like the way they've done the dungeons, because it's not your traditional, like, London horror dungeon. It's more about the history of the castle, and you get actors explaining a little bit of the history each time. I wouldn't say it's like very in-depth, but it's a kind of audience participation kind of deal.
Yeah, it's very family friendly.
Yeah,
in a sense, it's kind of creepy enough to give you the willies if you're a little bit kind of like predisposed to that.
Yeah,
I thought it was really good. I've been several times in the past. Once when it was just the castle.
Yeah,
and then kind of later again, when they started to do some of the more kind of like showy stuff. So this is the first time I've been since it was more the kind of like, I don't want to say theme park. Theme park's probably a little derogatory for what it is.
It's Mantisard's group, but
it's got players, it's got live action bits and pieces. So I thought it was kind of like, it was really cool. If you were a small kid into castles, you'd be like, this is just awesome.
Yeah, unfortunately we missed the jousting, which was the other big show that they have. Quite a few shows throughout the day, and there's always some activity going on. So there's always something you can go and do with the kids, or if you're there as a group, just wander off and find something to do. Plenty of food venues. About Birmingham City Centre pricing for food and drink, to be fair, so it wasn't too bad for us. You can imagine it's quite expensive if you go as a family.
Yeah.
But they do have some family discount offers and stuff like that.
I think if you were a family, you might be best served, like, not on the day when the sun is crashing into the earth. But if you take a picnic and the grass is green, you'd be fine.
The grass is green and the wasps are few.
It was a bit more like the surface of Mars when we were there.
It was quite interesting watching all the people like huddle in the groups of shade that was around.
Yeah. Up against the wall of the castle.
I mean, it was a fun experience. I'm surprised it was as good of it as it was.
Yeah, it was fun.
So I always, when you hear it's like run by like Madame Tussauds group, and it's like the same group as Alton Towers and Legate Discovery Centre, it's like, have they kiddified it a bit too much?
It's Merlin Entertainment.
Merlin Entertainment Group. But yeah, so it was kind of, is it going to be a bit too kiddified? But I think there was enough castle-y stuff to get you going, and there's enough interesting bits. And they blended the history in with the kind of entertainment side of it as well, quite nicely.
Yes.
Yeah, I would recommend.
I mean, it's definitely like, so I think the last time I went was like maybe 10 years ago, and I took like a friend who was visiting from America, and she loved it just because, you know,
castles.
It's a real castle. Yeah.
It's not like the ones where you get, is it medieval times?
Yeah. Although I have done medieval times over there, so.
But yeah, so recommended, nice little day trip, not too far from Birmingham. And you get the train there pretty straightforward and easily from either, I think it's from Moore Street or Snow Hill.
And to get to the entrance, aim for Castle Street. The clue is in the name.
Clue's in the name. Thank you for joining us on the Geeky Brewery Show. This issue, Sam, where can we find you online?
You can find me at SDEdwards89 on Blue Sky, Instagram, and Threads, and also on the Geeky Premier website every Thursday with the film roundup.
Awesome. Lee, how about yourself?
You can find me on YouTube and Blue Sky at Bob the Pet Ferret, and you can find me on the Geeky Premier website every Friday doing the games roundup.
Keith, how about yourself?
On Blue Sky and Instagram under the moniker of Hardlock Hotel,
and then Wednesday on the Geeky Brummy media channels, covering the latest and greatest in comics that are out on that day.
And you can find me at parish.ryan on Instagram, I think, possibly. I'll be on Threads and Blue Sky as well. We had Ryan Parish. There's not that many of us out there. You'll probably find me. But you can find us all at Geeky Brummy on, if you're watching it on YouTube, whilst you're here, don't forget to like, subscribe, hit the buttons, you know, bell icon.
Do comments, algorithms, comments, all those things.
Engage. If you're not watching this and you're listening to us, it's your podcasting service of choice, but you can find us on YouTube if you want to see our faces.
I'm not going to recommend it. not for me, but for the rest of you, you know.
But yeah, if you want to see us, we're on there as well. But thanks for listening, and we shall see you back soon. And don't forget to check out baff.uk for updates about Birmingham Anime Film Festival. But we'll see you soon. Bye, everybody.
Bye. Bye.
This issue of the Geeky Brummy podcast was hosted by Ryan Parrish, with Sam Edwards, Lee Price, and Keith Bloomfield. The show is produced by Viv Parrish, and this was a Geeky Brummy production.